The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to take up what I think is a very interesting controversy. Recently, a distinguished researcher at Yale University, whose name is Dr. Thomas Seyfried, has created a kind of a firestorm in the nutritional community, particularly as relates to cancer. Advancing a theory that a ketogenic diet, a diet that is bereft of carbohydrates, kind of like the Atkins diet that gets you into ketosis, could be a breakthrough method of dealing with cancer. A lot of people have embraced this. It's gone the rounds of the internet, and it's become popular among many holistic doctors. So today we're going to turn to an expert. One of our favorite resources on the subject of cancer through the years here when this program was called Health Talk, now rechristened Intelligent Medicine. He's Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. Dr. Gonzalez is a cancer specialist par excellence, specializing in a natural approach to cancer. He is not a conventional oncologist. He doesn't use conventional techniques, although he doesn't necessarily discourage them. He and I have had sort of parallel careers. We both started in medicine approximately the same time, but we diverged because he has focused entirely during his entire professional career on the subject of cancer, developed quite a successful cancer practice here in New York City with sometimes very extraordinary results with very challenging cancers, and he has written some interesting books. One is entitled The Trophoblast and the Origins of Cancer. Another about his experience working with the National Cancer Institute, which was a sorrowful episode. It's entitled What Went Wrong, specifically when his therapies were tested, supposedly in an objective way, but not really, as it turns out. And so without further ado, here's our guest, Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. Nick, it's a pleasure having you back on the program.
Ron, it's always great to have the opportunity to talk with you, so thanks for having me on again.
Sure. Now, you've written a great series of articles on the subject of the ketogenic diet for cancer, and I'll give our listeners a resource link. Of course, you have your own website at dr-gonzalez, that's spelled with two Z's, gonzalez.com. And also, this series of articles, it's a long series, so it's an eight-part series, and it's published, let's see, where do we have that link? It's on
Natural Health 365 is the site.
Natural right, naturalhealth365.com, correct?
Right.
Okay. It. Yeah, I see it here, naturalhealth365.com. And then just click on ketogenic diet. You can read it in its entirety. But let me just quote you something from a really popular website, Dr. Mercola, who has millions and millions of hits every month on his website. He's really considered a spokesperson for the field of complementary alternative medicine. He's appeared numerous times on Dr. Oz. And he writes a glowing review of the ketogenic diet. He writes, could a ketogenic diet eventually become a, quote, standard of care, drug-free treatment for cancer? Personally, I believe it's absolutely crucial for whatever type of cancer you're trying to address, and hopefully someday will be adopted as a first line of treatment. He then goes on to talk about Dr. Thomas Seyfried. I guess that's the correct pronunciation. It's S-E-Y-F-R-I-E-D. He quotes his work. He says he's one of the leading pioneer academic researchers in promoting how to treat cancer nutritionally. He's been teaching science as it relates to cancer treatment at Yale University and Boston College for the past 25 years, and he's written 150 peer-reviewed scientific articles, and now he's published a book, and I've seen this book. It's a big book. It's a 400-plus page book called Cancer as a Metabolic Disease on the Origin, Management, and Prevention of Cancer. So let's talk about the ketogenic diet, and so perhaps you can give our listeners a review of what is the ketogenic diet and what does it purport to do for cancer?
As you said, Bob Atkins is one of the world's great experts in the ketogenic diet. Basically, a ketogenic diet is a diet that involves no carbohydrate intake, although that's actually a misnomer, and even Bob Atkins would agree to that, because, for example, when you eat a piece of red meat, there'll be some stored glucose even in the red meat, but basically no extra carbohydrates. Now, most cells in our body will use glucose, blood sugar, as the main energy source when it's available. Of course, with a ketogenic diet, it's high fat and fairly high protein, but no extra carbohydrates. And in that situation, there really isn't a good supply of glucose, so the body starts using ketone bodies. Ketone bodies are the result when the body breaks down fatty acids. What happens when you're not eating carbohydrates? The body starts breaking down stored fat into free fatty acids. They're oxidized through beta oxidation, which is happens in the cells, and that produces a product called acetyl coenzyme A, which is the end product of fatty acid metabolism. That in the liver is converted into ketone bodies like beta hydroxybutyric acid, and then those ketone bodies can be used for energy by the brain. Particularly the brain needs blood sugar, but it can use these ketone bodies as an alternate source of energy. So when you're on a no-carbohydrate diet, and basically high fat and moderately high protein, the body will start using these ketone bodies, which are the breakdown product of fatty acid metabolism. It uses it for energy the way it would normally use blood sugar. And Seyfried's hypothesis is that cancer cells are unique in that they can only use blood glucose and cannot use ketone bodies to make energy. So if you go on a ketogenic diet where there is no extra blood sugar being provided, that you'll starve the cancer cells because they cannot use these ketone bodies to make energy. You basically starve them to death. That's the wonderful theory which he outlines, as you said, in over 400 pages, and he has wonderful diagrams and all these kinds of esoteric biochemical pathways.
And incidentally, for some of our listeners who are acquainted with this ketogenic diet, this is the ketones are what makes those pea strips that Dr. Atkins used to give out purple. And it was the object, and patients would go to Dr. Atkins. I remember I was a young practitioner at the time. They said, well, I went to Dr. Atkins. He gave me these little strips that I would pee on, or I'd dip them in my urine, and I want it. My goal is to get them to be purple, but it's so hard to get them to be purple. Purple indicates the presence of those ketone bodies, which means that you're efficiently burning just ketones and you're not relying on any glucose. Not a molecule of glucose has gotten into your diet. You've been perfectly adherent to the ultra-low-carb diet.
Yeah, that's correct, Bob. I know you're a good friend of Bob. That was his way of testing whether his patients were compliant enough. But actually, that's a misconception even with Bob's approach, and he was, again, one of the world's experts, because the liver can convert amino acids like alanine into glucose. And, for example, on a ketogenic diet, which is one of the contradictions, you don't have a zero blood sugar level. You actually have a normal blood sugar level. And Bob used to do these glucose tolerance tests.
That's right, because otherwise your blood sugar would go to zero, right?
Right.
But it doesn't.
If you had no glucose in your body, go to zero, which is unheard of. And even on a ketogenic diet under Bob Atkins, where people were very restrictive and would use these ketone strips, they still had normal. In fact, he used to show me the blood sugar curve, so they had normal blood sugar. I said, well, Bob, that means that they have blood sugar, that it isn't 100% ketosis. That what happens in that situation, yes, the body will use preferentially fatty acids and ketone bodies to make energy, but the liver is also converting amino acids into blood sugar. So your blood sugar will be 80, 90, even on a ketogenic diet. So the idea that you're absolutely absent of blood glucose, whether it's Seyfried or Bob Atkins, who was a good friend and I respect him, of course, is just incorrect, because the body is producing blood sugar, not producing excess, but it is producing some blood sugar through the liver. So there is some blood sugar, but Seyfried kind of ignores that point, but makes the fact that he makes it as a fact that cancer cells can only live on blood sugar and cannot use any kind of ketone body or fatty acids for energy.
So enter a guy named Otto Warburg, right? Because I know you're going to get
correct
to that. He's a brilliant guy. Describe his theory of how cells work.
Yeah, Warburg was nominated for the Nobel Prize more than anyone in history. I think four times. He won in 1931, and then he was in Germany, and actually, unfortunately, he didn't turn against the Nazis, so he stayed in Germany, which was a mistake. mistake, of course. But he was the first person to outline a lot of the energy pathways in the cell, and he was very brilliant and did a brilliant job for that, whatever his politics may later have been. He did a great job, and he outlined the steps in which blood sugar is converted into ATP energy in the cells and the cytoplasm and the mitochondria, et cetera, et cetera. And he was the first to suggest that cancer cells differ from normal cells in that they cannot survive in the presence of oxygen, whereas normal cells need oxygen to make energy. Million cells, well, bacteria don't, but most complex organisms like us, our cells need oxygen to make adequate amounts of energy. And Warburg suggested, which is kind of related to what Seafried is saying today, that cancer cells are very unique biochemically, and they can't survive in oxygen, and they can't use blood glucose. So he kind of was the first person to suggest that. In fact, Seafried in his book gives Warburg a lot of credit. And indeed, Warburg was a brilliant biochemist. No one would deny that, far smarter than I'll ever be. But I don't agree with that. That's a nice theory, but very often nice theories, even from Nobel laureates, don't pan out in practice.
Well, you know, it also kind of goes to the theory that cancer cells are just primitive regular cells. They're cells that have lost the sophistication and the regulatory ability and the specialization of more advanced cells, cells that, for example, make up our receptors in our eyes or our secretory cells in our livers or pancreas, and that they're just sort of these primitive, wild-type growing cells. And as a result, because they're primitive, they act kind of like bacteria, like anaerobic bacteria, and they subsist, they can't do well in an oxygen-rich environment. So is this an oversimplification?
No, you're absolutely correct. I mean, one of the main tenets of 20th century and 21st century cancer biology is that cancer begins in the healthy, normal, differentiated cells that somehow go berserk and become amoeboid and primitive, this magical process where they somehow go backwards in time and lose their normal structure and their normal function. You know, we have over 200 different cell types in our body, and they're very sophisticated. And as you know, a first-year medical student after histology can identify a nerve cell or a muscle cell or a secretory cell in the pancreas. They're very distinctive, and the way they look under the microscope reflects what their function is. Now, with cancer cells, they lose that differentiation, as it's called, the specialization, their specialized look under the microscope, and they lose their functional capabilities, and they become primitive like an amoeba, and they're able to proliferate without restraint. Normal cells don't proliferate without restraint. They're very well behaved. They become invasive. Normal cells are uninvasive. They can produce a very rich blood supply, angiogenesis. That's how cancers survive. But there's a new school of thought beginning about beginning with Dr. Beard 100 years ago, but rediscovered more recently in the early part of the last decade, you know, about 2002 or so, from Dr. Wicke at the University of Michigan, who said cancer doesn't begin in the mature cells, which is the way I was taught in medical school. He said it begins in the stem cells. Mm-hmm. Stem cells, of course, a hot topic of research. Those are those primitive cells dispersed throughout our body.
Mm-hmm. With great regenerative potential. They want to put stem cells into our joints. They want to put stem cells into our spinal cords to regenerate, you know, after spinal injuries, that they're a wonderful way of rejuvenating our bodies.
That's correct. I mean, stem cells, as you know, serve a very useful function. They provide a reservoir of reserves for cells that are lost through normal turnovers in the intestinal tract, through disease, through injury, just from aging. And that's how we survive, because stem cells, which exist in every tissue in our body, provide replacements of cells that are lost. Now, Wicke believes that cancer begins not from the mature, differentiated cells doing their normal job, and then they go crazy and become cancer, but from the stem cells that lose their normal regulatory restraint and start dividing without restraint, invading, migrating, and develop blood supply. And Seafried makes the point that stem cells are like cancer cells because they rely on just glycolysis, which is the burning of sugar not necessarily without oxygen. You need oxygen to make energy in a stem cell or a cancer cell, Seafried says. But the point he misses with stem cells is stem cells are very malleable, and they can adapt to the local environment, and they can, if you give a stem cell blood sugar, we use blood sugar, it can give it fat, it can use fat. The whole point of stem cells is they're very adaptable. These are the cells that produce the mature cell lines that allow our life to continue. And they can adapt very nicely depending on the energy source you provide them. Wicke believes cancer develops from stem cells, as I believe. So these stem cells can adapt very quickly depending on the environment, whether you give them oxygen or not oxygen, or whether you give them glucose or ketogenic ketones. They can adapt to the energy supply very easily, and that's a fact that Seafried doesn't really address.
Well, you also, you dish a little bit on some conversations that you had perhaps decades ago with Dr. Atkins, because, you know, he was interested in talking to you because he had a passion for cancer, and I'm sure he wanted to pick your brain about, you know, how you were treating your cancer patients. He applied the ketogenic diet to his cancer patient population. And this was a diet that was very successful for many of his diabetic patients, his overweight patients. Many conditions responded well to the ketogenic low-carb diet. But you dish a little bit in your series what is it, 365 in Natural Health 365, about some of your, entre-new conversations with Dr. Atkins.
Look. Bob is a very good friend, and I really respected him enormously. I knew him from the time I was a journalist before I went to medical school. And as I say in the article, in 1987, he invited me to come join his practice, which I was very great. I had great gratitude that he would do that. He wanted me to run his cancer unit, but he wanted me to treat them with the Atkins program. And, of course, I already knew about Kelly's work with the different diets, and I said I really couldn't do that. And he was a very smart guy. This is one of the most successful doctors in the history of medicine. And he was very successful with his diabetics and heart disease patients, and he was a cardiologist by training. But he thought cancer was really the ultimate goal in medicine, to cure cancer, and he was going to show me with the ketogenic diet. I mean, he added other things too, as you know, but that was his main emphasis, and I said, it's not going to work. Well, the fact is it didn't work. In the late 90s, after trying for over 10 years and treating thousands of patients, he actually, I had lunch with him down in Washington, and he told me he was closing down his cancer unit. And I said, well, I knew what the answer would be, but I said, well, why is that? He said, well, no one's responding. And I always respected him because he was an honest guy, and he never wrote a book about cancer. He wrote about diet and nutrients, and as I said in my article, if you go on Amazon and Google Bob Atkins, you'll see dozens of books that go on for pages, and these books sold, you know, hundreds of millions of copies in total. Mm-hmm. But there's no book on cancer, because even though he tried and had a whole unit in his practice, which he had wanted me to run, which was devoted to treating cancer patients, there was no success. And he admitted it and closed it down and went back to being a diet, you know, ketogenic diet doctor, and again with more success until, unfortunately, I think he died in 2003. So he admitted that it wasn't working, and he knew more about the ketogenic diet practice than anyone alive. And this guy treated tens of thousands of patients with the variations of the ketogenic diet, including, I would estimate, several thousand patients with cancer, because at its heyday, because of his reputation, and he had his own radio show and his books, cancer patients were flocking to him. That's why he offered me the job there. He knew that they would come, and they did, but it was very discouraging for him. So he kind of gave up on that. And apparently Seyfried was not aware of that. A lot of people aren't, because Bob never wrote a book about it, never talked about it very much.
So is Dr. Seyfried a cancer doctor? Does he have, I mean, you've treated, I mean, we could estimate hundreds, perhaps thousands of patients with cancer. So you have a pretty good idea of what does work and what doesn't work. What about his track record in treating cancer patients?
Well, he's a PhD, so he doesn't actually treat cancer patients. I have no problem with PhDs in elaborate, as I say in my article, I have no problem with papers or long books where you discuss elaborate theory, but he makes a leap of faith saying this is a cancer cure without any hesitation, doubt, or reservation. But he's never treated cancer patients. And in his book, which really astonished me when I first got it, which came out in 2012, he only has two case reports, and neither of them are impressive. One was a brain cancer patient. He was a tragic story, a young boy. I think he was 4 years old when he developed a really kind of non-aggressive but very big brain cancer. And he did chemotherapy, and then 2007 he went on the Seyfried ketogenic diet after his mother learned about it on the Internet. And he continued chemotherapy, had a quote, extraordinary 15%, end quote, reduction in the tumor, and then he died eventually. I mean, that was not an impressive case to me for several reasons. First, he was on chemo at the same time, and even chemo, though it doesn't cure most brain cancers, it will cause a reduction in tumor. The other case was diagnosed with multiple myeloma. Physician, 2009, broke his arm when he was lifting some weights, did the studies, and was found to have multiple myeloma, and learned about Seyfried and decided he'd go on the Seyfried diet. But he was only on it like 2.5 years at the time of the book, and he still had active disease, and that was the other case, and it was totally unimpressive as a case. I was surprised it would have even been included.
Yeah, so
Really no data. There's no, it's right. All theory. It's 400 pages of theory, but there's no documentation at all.
Well, you know, you're familiar with trying to present data and trying to impress the scientific community with the plausibility of your theories and the efficacy of your work. You actually wrote an entire book. It's a long treatise about your experience in trying to work with the scientific community to get them to accept some of the principles that you use in natural treatment of cancer. And that book is the sad chronicle, which you titled
What Went Wrong.
What went wrong. And in you're presenting your theories to the National Institutes of Health. How many cases did you muster? And, you know, give us some examples of the cases that you think actually show, I mean, that are less than coincidental or less than, you know, sometimes they're outliers.
Well, you know, I did my original evaluation at Kelly, and that we have a book called One Man Alone that I finished when I was doing my immunology fellowship back in 1986.
Your original book,
My original book, 50 cases, and then I presented to the NCI back in 1993 and presented 25 cases, and at that point I'd only been in practice 5 years. And then I presented to them subsequent to that, and that's why they gave me the grant. But unfortunately, the grant was undermined at every level and with mismanagement, whether deliberate or not. It was really quite unfortunate.
That's a whole long, lugubrious story, which you were getting
in the
book.
Yeah, I know. People say I went into detail, but I have to go into detail for 580 pages because I was taking on the NCI and your alma mater, unfortunately, wonderful university, Columbia.
Yeah, well, if anybody wants to read a book that it goes into detail about why alternative methods are often not accepted or legitimized and are not embraced and they're claimed to be unscientific or junk science, when in fact they're very plausible and scientifically based and well documented, this is the book to read. So, you know, I want to plug that book. It's an excellent book.
I appreciate it. Yeah, you know, as you know, I was trained as an academic researcher. I was trained to do bone marrow transplants under the guy that used to be president of Sloan Kettering. He's now dead, Robert Good. But I was trained as a conventional researcher, and I respect the research methodology and this idea that we all of us alternative doctors are a bunch of morons and don't know how to do science. It turned out in our clinical study, which went on for some 8 years, we were the people that tried to do it right, and it was the academic authorities, the so-called geniuses, that completely mismanaged it at every step, from informed consent to keeping the data. So even the FDA has confirmed that it was mismanaged by the people who are running the study. So
coming back to the Thomas Seyfried situation, you're saying that if the theory is elaborated for, you know, hundreds of pages and is based on, I think, sound biochemistry and interesting hypotheses, and it's a hypothesis generator, but it's not necessarily I mean, very impressive. It's a doorstop of a book. It reminds me a little bit of a new book on economics that has come out by a French economist. I think his name is Piketty. Piketty.
Yeah, what a foolish book that is.
Well, the book basically lays out the theory that we should tax people more at the upper echelons.
75%, yeah.
Right, but a lot of people have concluded that the book, although it's 600 pages long, that very few people end up reading it. They see the book and they say, "Well, this is a book, and it's got 600 pages, and it's written by a fabulous economist, and so it must justify our efforts to enact higher taxes, luxury taxes, and taxes on the rich, because who knows what the heck he's talking about? It's so esoteric, and there's so many diagrams and graphs." So I'm wondering if the Seyfried book is not akin to that. You know, it's that people, you know, who's going to wade through that? I mean, perhaps you did because you're
a cancer
specialist.
I
mean, I couldn't read it. I couldn't read it line by line. I just had to kind of skim it.
Well, it is very, very dense. I mean, I kind of enjoy dense books as kind of my nerdy approach. But it's all this biochemistry, but as you said, like that economics book, which the guy who wrote that economics book has already come out on his own website admitting that a lot of his data is incorrect. So he's already retracting it because he's been so heavy.
Well, that's okay. That's okay, because the book is already sitting on the coffee tables of all the decision makers in Washington. And higher taxes are coming our way as a result.
Yeah, and they don't read the fact that the author of that book has already admitted that his statistics were incorrect. But that's the way Seyfried's book is. And again, I have no problem with people presenting theories, but as we've discussed, the field of cancer medicine is littered with the elaborate, wonderful sounding theories and approaches that we're going to cure cancer that's gone on for 100 years that led nowhere. And this, I fear, is going to lead the same way. You know, one of the issues I have with this book is that he's claiming that this is a cancer cure, even though the only two cases he could present were very marginal at best. These are cases I never would think of presenting. They're so weak. And he only has two cases. I mean, humility would have been a good approach. In science, humility is always a good approach. I would have respected it more if you said, this is my theory and I think it might be helpful. But he goes beyond that. He said, this is the way you treat cancer. This is going to cure it. I know it. And here's the biochemistry to prove it. The only problem is he doesn't have any cases. I mean, when I first began investigating Kelly, I spent 5 years going through thousands of his records before I even think about seeing anything. And I put it together in my monograph with 50 cases, 26 different kinds of cancer. And some of those patients I follow today, one of them I always talk about is a woman from Appleton, Wisconsin, was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer with a biopsy of a liver lesion at surgery, confirmed at the Mayo Clinic. And the honest Mayo Clinic oncologist said nothing would help her, and she found Kelly in 1982. 32 years later, 2014, she's still alive and well. She never
Goodness
had
gracious.
Cancer.
Yeah.
Yeah, 32 years later, with stage 4 biopsy-proven aggressive adenocarcinoma. It was the standard adenocarcinoma, aggressive pancreatic cancer, biopsy-proven liver metastases, confirmed at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, and had no chemo radiation surgery. So Kelly, and she's alive 30. I follow her now. She considers me her doctor 32 years later. I know of no patient in the history of the world with stage 4 pancreatic cancer, biopsy-proven liver mets has lasted that long. And she was on a high-carbohydrate diet. She was drinking 4 glasses of carrot juice a day, endless fruit, grains, you know, grains of the enemy of mankind we're hearing. But she, there's a patient who was on whole grains, organic whole grains, and sprouted grains, etc. But she was on a very high carbohydrate diet. That's the way Kelly treated it. That's the way I treat pancreatic cancer patients. And here's a woman who, by Seyfried standards, could not have survived. I mean, he makes
right.
it clear that if you eat carbohydrates as a cancer patient, you are going to die.
Right. It's like putting lighter fluid on the fire. All right. This is a good inflection point, because now we're going to leave listeners wondering, is a ketogenic diet the wrong way to go? Is meat and fat, are they the culprits? Are they the cause of cancer? We'll keep you in suspense until part two of our podcast with cancer expert Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez, who specializes in a natural and nutritionally based approach to cancer. What's the answer to cancer? Does it lie in one specific diet or another? In part two, we'll address that question. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.